Hello, everybody, and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin, and we are live currently on Facebook in this new world of lots of different buttons to press. So, hello, and we hope that you are receiving us in our live Facebook group. You might be listening on a podcast or on our website, and just so that you know, we go live on Facebook in our private group at 9 a.m. on Sundays, UK time, if you ever want to join us in the moment when we actually do this. So here we are, and this week we have an incredible source that Justin's brought, and we will read it together and see where our reflections take us. And Justin, this source this week has the familiar feeling of, as I read it, I'm completely confused. And confusion seems to be an incredible gateway to cool things and enlightening conversations. So I'm really glad and feel very welcomed by the confusion of the source that you've chosen. And Justin, thank you for always finding things that I would never find. It's the beauty of it. So thank you and welcome to us and welcome to everybody here listening.
You're so welcome, Lizzie. It's lovely to be here. Lovely to be here with you. I'm feeling very, very pleased that we seem to have figured out our technical difficulties going live. It's really complicated now, but we've done it. And here we are. It's not complicated now. We're actually live. It was complicated sort of turning, cranking all the gears to get the thing working. So that feels very good. It feels very, very good to be here with you. And I'm very excited to bring this source because it's from a book that I've had on my shelf for a really long time that I decided this had been calling to me, and it's by a potter called I've forgotten her name. We'll come to that in a moment. And I'm loving reading it, and I'm finding myself being a little bit turned inside out, Lizzie, by reading it. And of course, bringing a little section. This is a section in of part of something much longer. Maybe it makes a different kind of sense in the bigger context, but it's very beautiful and very generous and very bold and very fierce and very loving book. So we'll get to that in a moment, but I also want to say hello everybody and welcome. I also want to say, Lizzie, you'll know that we ran our the third space 2-day Foundations of Coaching program at the end of last week, our most recent one. We had a full group, we had 14 people, and quite a lot of people were there simply because of turning towards life. So I want to say to all of you who came, thank you for coming. It was such a treat to meet you. Like, it's such a thing, Lizzie, to know
Oh,
that there are
amazing.
many, many people out in the world in conversation with us, but who we don't get to see. But then to get to spend 2 whole days with people, we had a really, really wonderful, tender, joyful, and very rich 2 days together, and I could feel the way that this conversation, which I was thinking about last night, has really been going for a long time now, how it reaches into the world. And it doesn't just, I know it exists in between. There are people who listen, who share it with their friends and their partners and their colleagues and have conversations about it. And there are people who listen and who are in the conversation with us just inside themselves. And then sometimes there are people who show up and are in conversation with us too, and it's very joyful. So thank you all for coming, and you are all welcome to go to the Third Space, wearethirdspace.org website, and see all the things that we're up to, because you can join us for things, and that would be really lovely. And I also just wanted to remind everyone, if you want to get this straight in your inbox each week, go to turningtowards.life, and there's a sign up button there, and you can support us there if you want to. So if you're benefiting from this and you want to pay it forward in a way and support us in doing this, there's a support us button, and you're really welcome to do that too. And if you just want to listen, that's also fine. And here we are. So this source you will always find in our Facebook group, which everyone is welcome to join. Just search out Turning Towards Life. And we also put it in the email, in the show notes, on the podcasts, and also on the turningtowards.life website. You'll always find the videos and all the sources. And this is called The Center and the Opposites. And it's by, I need to say the author's name, M.C. Richards, from the book Centering. As our personal universes expand, if we keep drawing ourselves into center again and again, Everything seems to enhance everything else. It becomes unnecessary to choose which person to be as we open and close the same ball of clay. We'll make pots for our English classes, read poems to our pottery classes, write on the clay, print from the clay. The activity seems to spring out of the same source, poem or pot, loaf of bread, letter to a friend, a morning's meditation, a walk in the woods, turning the compost pile, knitting a pair of shoes, weeping with pain, fainting with discouragement, burning with shame, trembling with indecision. What's the difference? What I mean here is that it seems to me that one must be able to picture before oneself the opposite of what one has just declared in order to keep alive the possibility of freedom, of mobility, of growth. As soon as we find ourselves spellbound by order and our ability to control our medium and our tools to do exactly what we want, we must do the opposite as well. As soon as we find ourselves working with danger and disrespect for the canons of taste, do the opposite. Most of the separations we make need to be looked at very carefully. Weakness and strength, sickness and health, not knowing and knowing, play and seriousness. For example, we tend to think that strength is all important, and yet we have a very shallow notion of what strength consists of. For unless our weaknesses play into our strengths, we're not as supple as we should be. The natural rhythms of life seem to go by polarities which swing around this unmoving center. The very rhythms of our breathing are the dialogue of inner and outer.
You, Justin. The Centre and the Opposites by M.C. Richards. As our personal universes expand, if we keep drawing ourselves into centre again and again, everything seems to enhance everything else. It becomes unnecessary to choose which person to be as we open and close the same ball of clay. It becomes unnecessary to choose which person to be as we open and close the same ball of clay. We will make pots for our English classes, read poems to our pottery classes, write on the clay, print from the clay. The activity seems to spring out of the same source. Poem or pot, loaf of bread, letter to a friend, a morning's meditation, a walk in the woods, turning the compost pile, knitting a pair of shoes, weeping with pain, fainting with discouragement, burning with shame. Trembling with indecision. What's the difference? What I mean here is that it seems to me that one must be able to picture before oneself the opposite of what one has just declared in order to keep alive the possibility of freedom, of mobility, of growth. As soon as we find ourselves spellbound by order and our ability to control our medium and our tools to do exactly what we want, we must do the opposite as well. As soon as we find ourselves working with danger and disrespect for the canons of taste, do the opposite. Most of the separations we make need to be looked at very carefully. Weakness and strength, sickness and health, not knowing and knowing, play and seriousness. For example, we tend to think that strength is all important. And yet, we have a very shallow notion of what strength consists of. For unless our weaknesses play into our strengths, we are not as supple as we should be. The natural rhythms of life seem to go by polarities which swing around this unmoving center. The very rhythms of our breathing are the dialogue of inner and outer.
Thanks, Lizzie. Well, there is a lot in here, isn't there? But in a way, where I find myself starting is this lovely idea. Well, let me go back a step. If you were to ask me what I think this is about, I would say, I think it's about the cost of holding on too tight to one side of anything in ourselves. I remember actually the 1 year, it was quite a long time ago, I went to a workshop. I was meeting with a group of colleagues, Lizzie, and we were people, we were faculty on a program I was working on. And we were talking about what we thought was next for us in our development. And I realized I was so unbelievably tired. I could barely speak. I was so tired. I'd been working so hard and throwing myself in so hard. And I suddenly had this realization that I'd got really, really, really committed to earnestness. Like I have to be very earnest everywhere, and that's what who I'm meant to be. And I started to realize that the antidote to the exhaustion I was feeling from being so earnest all the time was play. And that what was really called for was knowing myself equally much as playfulness, and that if I was earnest, I ought to remember to play at the same time. And if I was, it was unlikely that I was going to get overcommitted to play, certainly at that point. And if I was too playful, I ought to just remember earnestness also, and have them both live one another. And it was absolutely revelatory, because it had never occurred to me until that point that I actually was trying to be earnest all the time. It was invisible to me. It was just like, oh, well, this is who I am. I'm a serious person, and I work very hard, and I take care of things, and I do things well, and I have to, be very serious about it. And it suddenly became available to me to see that I'd just been breathing in and never breathing out, to pick up the part that she writes at the end. I've been doing a whole load of breathing in. It's no wonder I was exhausted. So I one of the reasons I brought this is I love the idea that we're really called upon to really ask big questions about any side of something that we've taken to be the serious side. So the big ones at the end that she talks about, weakness and strength, to point out that it's not very strong if you're it's hard to be strong if you're really rigid, and that in order to be supple and move, there's a kind of weakness that's called for, because it's the weakness of being able to move and to be moved around. They both belong together. So I actually find myself feeling very enlivened by the idea that the moment that we found ourselves spellbound by order and the ability to control, we must do the opposite right away and sort of surrender to the thing. Or the moment we find ourselves being disrespectful for taste, like smashing things up, we ought to remember that there's something in taste that's really important. And I think that this is revelatory and will be surprising to, it's surprising to so many of us to realize that then where this leads is not having to choose which person to be. So I can be the same person. Like this idea, she was an English teacher, and she was a university lecturer, an English teacher, and a potter, and whatever. And she used to do all of this, right? Make pots for her English classes, read poetry to her pottery classes, write on clay, and then everything, speaking to you, Lizzie, being a parent, doing the dishes, filling in my tax return, going for a walk, writing an article. They all, what she's showing us is that they all end up springing from the same source, because we've been gradually undoing all the various kinds of separations in us, and it's a way to become more and more a sort of unified whole person. And the part of it that seems very clear to me is that this is what she's asking of us, is something very, very active. It's not just, oh, I'll wait until our strength and weakness are in me, or she's saying, no. If you want this to happen, you actually have to be the one who, when you find yourself spellbound by order, bring in chaos. When you find yourself super earnest, bring in play. When you find yourself trying to be super strong, bring in softness, and vice versa. Don't just wait for it to happen to you, because you have a role in this just as much as you have a role in breathing in and breathing out. And actually, I really love that invitation, because it seems to me an invitation to participate very a actively in the reclaiming of the parts of ourselves that we leave out, or the undoing of our sort of rigid certainty, I am this and I'm not this. It's not just going to happen to us. Sometimes it will just happen to us, but sometimes we need to be the ones who start taking pots to our English class. And I think that's marvelous.
Oh, goodness. How do I? pick the thing. What I
Yeah.
want to say now. I'm so appreciative of the kind of writing that this is and the kind of throwing me into wondering that is happening. I'm suddenly extremely curious about myself. I'm like, oh, well, what am I? What am I? What am I doing in any moment in myself? Who am I being? And I'm feeling there's a kind of a dance here, like noticing when I'm being one thing that belongs to a pole, one of these polarized places. Firstly, just the invitation to notice that and then have something to do about it. It feels really simple and ordinary and powerful and amazing. Like when I can feel myself getting attached to something, what options do I have? You know, I can keep trudging down the road of this is how it needs to be, or I can wonder about what an opposite might be and see whether I can bring that right now. So I'm feeling the dance and also feeling my breath in this moment as well, and finding myself super curious about the joining of the outer and the inner. So I can, on the outside of me now, I can see you, Justin, and my out breath is connected to the world, if you like, to the outside world. And then as I breathe in, that's happening on the inside of me. And it seems that there's a kind of a dance between inner and outer that isn't separate from the choice to bring the opposite in at any moment. And I'm feeling very, just very curious about what it means to not be choosing who to be, but responding to what's here with this invitation of noticing polarities and employing bringing in the opposite. So when I'm feeling really afraid, what happens if I cultivate the opposite inside of that afraidness or next to that afraidness or bring it really close in or something? And I can't help, Justin, but thinking, I know this is kind of one of the ways that I always go, but it seems really obvious to me in this moment that us being different from one another isn't separate from this either. So what you bring me as somebody who's different from me, instead of me thinking you should be more like me, I can breathe in the difference that you are and then become something wholly different to either me or you. Like there's something about relationship where, know, I'm thinking, Justin, from when I was little, that I have a sister who's looks very similar to me. So everybody who meets us thinks we look really the same. But we're really different in our understanding of the world and our inner worlds and all of our kind of personality dynamics and all those kind of things. And the way that it has gone in our relationship is that we have brought each other very different things. And of course, in our teenage years, that was really rocky because who I was being and who my sister Holly was being were quite different things. But what we brought each other really helped us, has helped us, and continues to help us in our paths. So my tendency for enthusiasm and joy and over the top ridiculousness is very different to her tendency for depth and introspection and feelings and perceiving beauty in the most extraordinary way. And so then, when those things get woven together, those seemingly opposites, those two polar places get woven together. what gets brought is something way more beautiful in each person. So instead of me thinking, well, that's so different to me, what am I going to do with that? Because I love her, and because the part of my soul is made to be with her, I can welcome that opposite and then be different because of it. So I know that the kind of depth that I can now access and be with is in massive, huge part due to her teaching me, showing me what it means to feel the things are there to be felt and to look in ways that I would never have looked unless she taught me to look. And likewise, I think in the other direction, the kind of lightness and joy that I can bring to her has a big impact on her sense of freedom in the world, and that has changed her. So I'm really moved by the way that we can relate to these opposites and not think of them as like things that are just, oh, well, I'm not like that, or that's not me. But what is it to love the opposite as well, and to find what there is there? And like MC Richards is saying, these separations need to be looked at very carefully. Like I love that line. It's like, oh God, all the things I've made, I need to look at them carefully. And suddenly when you were reading, Justin, weakness and strength need to be looked at really carefully. I was like, well, yeah, of course they do. Like so many times in Turning Towards Life, the word that we're saying becomes like really small, and then what's behind the word becomes really big, and I don't know what's behind the word. Like I don't know what anything means anymore. Like that's the quality of this inquiry is, so what does it mean to be weak, and what does it mean to be strong? And we bandy these words around with all this kind of implicit understanding, apparently. And yet, when I ask myself those questions, I'm like, well, what do I mean? What do I mean when I say strength? What's that made of? How am I defining it? What even is it? So I'm feeling very, like I always do here, shot into wondering and curiosity and openness by this.
So much I want to say from what you said. And the first one was use this very beautiful language about putting beside one another inside ourselves, like having our weakness and our strength beside one another. And that seems to me such a move full of possibility, like when I'm very, very invested in my own earnestness and my own seriousness and my own taking responsibility, can I bring beside that my playfulness rather than have the playfulness obliterate it or feel like I've got to abandon seriousness, like so they can be in a dance when there's lovely, lovely language. And I for me anyway, it's not so hard to imagine the bringing alongside and the breathing in that you were talking about. And I was thinking as you were talking that it may even be very helpful to think of it literally as breath, that sometimes when we're holding on to one side of a polarity, we find that our breath reflects the side of the polarity we're holding on to, like the kind of breathing that comes when we're trying to be really strong, or the kind of breathing that we're trying to when we're or the kind of breathing that when I'm trying to be very serious, you know, and I breathe differently. And maybe we could learn to shift our breath to include the kind of breath of the side of the polarity that we've not paid so much attention to. So all of those were bubbling away in me. But actually, what's where I am. Oh, and the thing about way I was thinking about what you were saying is when we feel the difference between us and another person, seeing if we can feel the goodness that's in them that we have not given so much credence to in ourselves because we've judged it in some way. And can we bring alongside our own kind of virtues and goodness, the kind of goodness that they are, that's got a different flavour and a different taste and a different aspect to it. And that's lovely because then I can walk around and I go, how do I have more of the way you are in the world, Lizzie? How do I breathe you in so that that can live alongside the way that I know myself inside me? So we can have other people can be a very direct support to this point that you drew attention to this line that most of the separations we make, we actually really need to look at very carefully. It's an active process, and that's another way of doing it. I'm really, really taken by where you ended up, Lizzie, about language. and about what MC Richard says here about we have very shallow notions of many of the things that we are very committed to, and that if we would look and maybe let ourselves undo our certainty that we know what things are, or maybe really ask ourselves questions, what do I really mean by strength? We might go a very long way together, which is what we're doing. And she has this lovely line here where she says, we have very shallow notions of what strength consists of. Well, that's a real challenge to start to see that maybe when I'm trying to be strong, my notion of what strength is actually like this deep, but there's endless depth underneath if I were to really look. And that strength, as she says here, if you want to be supple, if you want to be able to move with things, you can't be like puffed up, fill my chest with breath, rigid muscles. That might feel like strength, but it's incredibly brittle and fragile. And when we try to be strong that way by sort of getting grandiose, somebody can come and push us over and we fall over. And it might be that they come and push us over by saying, I'm not afraid of you. And suddenly, like I'm rageful with how dare you say that. But also, she's picked on strength, but also weakness when we feel certain that we've got nothing to bring, that we are empty. Can we look at that in a new way and say, what's still here, even when it feels like there's nothing left? What have I not paid attention to that's of me that I can bring alongside all the ways I'm defeated and all the ways I'm feeling wrung out and all the ways I feel like I've got no capacity? And we could look at love and play and friendship and longing and courage, and we could look at all of them in these ways and find out that they are alive in ways that we'd not attended to. And what a marvelous exploration that would be to unsimplify our oversimplification, and then really breathe life into the richness that we might find if we were to take our language very, to treat it as rich a vaster territory as it actually is, rather than bandying about sort of cliches about what we mean about things. It's a really lovely thing to do.
You used the word commitment, Justin, and it made me think of that word in this context that you're bringing here. What does anything actually mean? And for me, I feel like the word commitment is supposed to be used for I'm committed to a relationship, I'm committed to my career path, or I'm committed to a certain something, I'm committed to doing the gardening every week or something. And yet, I'm finding myself really curious about things I'm committed to that aren't of that order. Like, I'm committed to you not really seeing who I am, or I'm committed to being asleep to certain things because I can't face them because they feel too much for me right now. Or I'm committed to this staying exactly the way that it is, even though I say that I want it to change. Or I'm committed to peace at all costs. Or I'm like, there's such a big realm in the word commitment that doesn't actually get expressed in normal life, like the average conversation that I would have. And I think that's one thing that, you talked about strength and weakness as well. Those words feel like genuinely lifelong paths of inquiry as well. Like, and my definition of what I'm committed to, because I am a whole world, as are you, as is everyone, and everything's shifting and changing all the time in life, and the world itself and the conditions we all live in is changing. What I know to mean as commitment seems like an ever-shifting inquiry. The same with strength and the same with weakness. Like, what can look like strength in one moment can be a weakness in another, and what looks like weakness in one moment can be extremely strong. And I feel really committed now in this moment to not using things like you said in a cliched kind of way, but to wondering what anything means and to see if I can find a depth of inquiry into words that I've taken for granted. I remember this inquiry as well. Like, what do you mean when you say I love you? Do you mean stay with me? Do you mean I need you? Do you mean you bring me complete bodily joy at the moment I see you? What is it? Like, what are we saying when we say this apparently societally loaded little statement? What's going on? What's going on when we're saying that? Or are you saying I'm afraid? Or are you saying stay away from me? I mean, goodness knows what we mean when we're saying things. And yet when we look, there's so many more explanations than are at the surface of the language that we're in. So I'm really, really grateful to MC Richards and the fact that this person is a potter and that this book is called Centering. All these things are forming in me about when I have an image of a potter in my mind, there's a center of a wheel always and stuff being flung. And then the flingingness creates shape. But it's all coming from the center. So I'm really intrigued to know more and to wonder what this book is in all of its glory that you're reading, Justin, and feeling the gift of somebody also who's dedicated to writing and potting, and how these things aren't separate from one another, and that beautiful invitation to bring a poem to the clay and a printer from the clay, and doing things that are, like, again, not separate from one another, really. So just as weakness isn't separate from strength, potting isn't different from engineering or art. Painting with fine oils or something isn't different to erecting a fence. Like, how, I mean, we make all these necessary separations because we need to distinguish one thing out from another. But then the return of nothing separate from one another at the same time as everything separate from everything else seems like a really excellent wondering.
That's definitely what that book is about. It's a miracle of a book. It's also about, I'm only a little way into it, Lizzie, but it's also about how hard it is to. I have thrown on a wheel when I was about 10, and I'm getting very interested in it and again, actually. But it's about the skill of having the clay be in the center of the wheel before you even start to work with it. And apparently, that's really hard. Just like it can be hard for us to do all the things that we're talking about, all the things that we're asking about. It takes a lot of attention and practice and dedication. And what a joyful conversation to be in. Thank you, Lizzie, for being in this conversation. And for I loved it when you wrote to me and you said this source was very discombobulating. What a good thing. And I feel like we're letting ourselves be undone and remade and everything by this conversation. So that's very joyful. Very exciting to find ourselves so far into this conversation, still right in the heart of the aliveness of it. And I know, Lizzie, you and I said when we started this that we would have this be real, we wouldn't try to polish it or make it something else. And I can feel the way it keeps on changing me. It's such an important practice to be in these kinds of inquiries together. So thank you to you, Lizzie, and thank you, everyone, all of you who are with us. Whether you just found your way to us or whether you've been traveling alongside us on and off or consistently for a very long time. A parting word. Please feel very encouraged to share this with people that you care about. We're very, very happy for this to get into the minds and hearts and bodies and hands of people who this would be a gift to. And you're really welcome if you are on listening on a platform where you can leave a review. You're really welcome, encouraged to leave a review that could help spread this into the world. And also, please know that you can write to us, hello at turningtools.life, or Lizzie or Justin at turningtools.life, or reach us in the Facebook group. It's always really excellent to be in conversation with you. And all being well, we will be back again next week, and we'll really look forward to being with you then.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye, everyone.